Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Conservationist Conversationalist. We are Brandon Anyert and
Aiden Wood.
How's it going, Aiden?
It's going.
It's going good. So, yeah, like we've said, because for future history, I guess that's an oxymoron. But for in the future, we're looking back on history. We're talking about weather to open up the podcast, so we can see how climate has changed. There's a better way to put that, but whatever. I'm ahead of myself right now.
Wait, did we agree to start doing like a weather report or something at the beginning of each episode?
Yeah, we said we were going to start doing the weather before out, so we could see as it progressed and as in a few years where we're like in a burning inferno. So
aren't there scientists who are doing that?
Yeah, but we're podcasters and we make the world go round, Aiden.
Okay.
Anyways, how's the weather in California?
I haven't been out. I've barely been outside my house in several days. So
okay,
it's the weather is indoors. From what I can tell. Okay, there were a few days ago that I was hardcore doing audio editing and I like was just dead inside. And so like the only time I went outside was for like 10 seconds that I just stood outside my front door. I just stood there for a few seconds because I was like, I just need some air.
That makes sense.
And then I went back inside and continued editing until 5 a.m. But yesterday I did go to work as a waitress, and it was pretty nice, and it was like warm, sunny.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fine. How's the weather in Washington?
Yeah, about the same. It's been warm. It's been sunny. We're supposed to have some thunderstorms here soon. But yeah, so that's the weather right now. It's just pretty. We're into June now, right? By the way, happy Pride, everybody. Happy
Hell
Pride
yeah. Month.
Yes, we're into June now, and I guess that's when things start to quiet down, you know, for us up here weather-wise, and so how are you celebrating Pride this year, Aiden?
By sleeping in and not talking to people.
That's one way to do it.
Yes, it's the depressed bisexual bitch way of celebrating Pride. I'm going to go on hiatus with my other podcast soon, so I can like first of all breathe and then do other shit, and I'm hoping to like actually like get a date with a girl at some point.
There you go. Well, that's a great, great thing to be looking forward to. Here, it's so weird because in Seattle they do their Pride Parade in June, like most cities do, and then but where I live in Bellingham, we don't do it till July, and so it's after Pride Month is over. So we're too lazy here, I guess, to actually like get with the program, but. Anyways, are you ready to dive into the jungle?
Yeah, let's go.
Let's do it. All right. So, Joe Biden is basically the main thing that everybody's talking about right now. Cause essentially it's Joe Biden against the rest of the Democrats, or at least in this field. And it's not exactly that, but really it feels like those who are at the top with him are the anti Joe Biden. And then there's Joe Biden. And, yeah, and so this week, there have been a number of things that he has done that some of them are just kind of, especially after what came out about him, they're just a little bit like, Joe, why? You know, there was one where he, you know, one instance where he called a little, he said, you're going to grow up too very pretty or something along those lines. And then he like he got a chair for an older lady at the last one of the last stops he was at, and she kind of pulled him in to whisper into his ear that her Republican neighbor was going to vote for him if he was the nominee over Trump, and he told her, and by the way, let the media know she pulled me in, and so. He's continuing down this, you know, he thinks it's funny, and I don't think that's particularly, you know, I think that maybe he should let go of, I don't know. It just makes it worse, in my opinion. But he also talked about how, he got the worst rating of any candidate from Greenpeace when it comes to climate change. He has not endorsed the Green Deal. He does not have any plan whatsoever for climate change in his platform. And in fact, by the way, the number one candidate, not oddly enough, because we know that he's been for the environment here in Washington. It's just a matter of whether he's actually gotten things done or not. Jay Inslee gets the best marks as an environmental politician running for president. But yeah, so Joe also made the comment, and this is the one that I think that I wanted to discuss that came out that just really kind of rubbed me the wrong way. So he made the comment that billionaires are not the problem, and that basically, you know, so my feelings on that when it comes to all, when it comes to the economic issues here in the country, is that he is that old school Democrat that everybody wants, because he comes across very, very well in the sense of social politics, or at least, well, I mean, not very, very well, but he comes across well enough to those who are nostalgic Democrats, but he still is right in there for the 1%. And, yeah, I find it crazy as somebody living in this day and age can see the homeless problems. You know, there are students up here in Washington who are, I'm sure it's happening in California as well, are sleeping in their cars to save money while going to school. And to think that that's not an issue, I just don't get it. But as I had said on Twitter, and I will say it again, he's right, though. Billionaires are not the problem. It's politicians like Joe Biden that are the problem who enable this.
Yeah, because, like, politicians have the power to stop it. Hypothetically, maybe not as individuals, but like our governmental system, like the role should be to protect the people,
right? Let me actually find his exact tweet here, or it's not even his tweet, it's a tweet from Jacobin Meg, I think I'm pronouncing that right. He says, so this is what he said: I'm not Bernie Sanders. I don't think 500 billionaires are the reason why we're in trouble. The folks at the top are not bad guys. Wealthy Americans are just as patriotic as poor folks. So, like I said, the Warren, Bernie, those candidates up there at the top of them, they're the anti-Joe Biden. So we do have a divide, obviously, that we already knew was happening. But I was talking to a friend here about that divide even being locally here, and because I'm part of the Whatcom Democrats. And my friend is worried because he's not a Biden fan. But he's so worried about how many people don't like Biden because he feels that we're going to be we're going to run into the same problem as we did 4 years ago. But we are at a point where we do need to start. Somebody said it today, Bernie inspired people to not settle for the status quo, not settle for the lesser of two evils. And what are your thoughts on that?
I'm Bernie not inspiring people to not settle for the status quo. I'd say that's accurate.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, in general, I guess. I mean, it doesn't just have to be Bernie, but I guess the progressive movement, right, is that we're no longer just settling for the lesser of two evils. We really want a candidate that represents us now, right? So it's not such a bad thing that we are very much against somebody like Biden.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that people are talking a lot about, like, who's the most electable candidate. I think that something that hurt Hillary wasn't, was this idea that, like, was, like, unenthusiastic support for her, of people being like, oh, well, like, I don't think Bernie could win, so I guess I'll support Hillary. I feel like a candidate's going to be more electable if people are excited for them, you know? Like, if people are, like, engaged and believe this person represents them and are, like, enthusiastically supporting this candidate. I think that, like, this idea, like, I will pick whatever I personally perceive as the most electable in a hypothetical scenario, it just seems like so unnecessary when I could alternatively support who I think is the best candidate, who I think represents me, and then support them enthusiastically and proudly. Like, I think that, like, because it's not like Republicans and Trump supporters aren't watching all of this shit unfold and aren't forming their own opinions about it and aren't seeing people talk about, like, oh, well, so-and-so, like, might have the best chance of beating Trump, so I don't like him, and he's creepy, but I guess I'll vote for him. People are, like, are gonna see that and be like, I have questions about, like, why we're excusing that behavior in Joe Biden, and we're going after Trump for it, and things like that, you know? Like, I feel like we should authentically and enthusiastically rally behind who we believe will be the best person for the job. Right.
Well, and it's interesting because another a few people have also brought up the fact that they believe that the three candidates that Trump, or four candidates probably, that Trump talks about the most, being Sanders, Warren, Buttigieg, and Biden, that those are the ones that he thinks he has a better chance at beating. Do you think that that's true? I have a hard time believing that the other candidates below those four have a better chance of beating Trump than those four. What do you think about that?
I think that's absolute nonsense. Who told you that?
That was a few people on Twitter actually were posting about it today. They believe that when Trump names people, is because he's hoping that those will be the people he gets to go up against.
I think that when Trump feels threatened, he lashes out. Like,
I agree with you.
I mean, like, this idea that like he's a bully and he'll pick on people, but like, he often like will pick on people who come up against him, who have something to say about him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's under the I think that that thought process is the thought behind that is that Trump thinks that he can be beaten. And although probably somewhere in his mind he does think he can be beaten, he's so arrogant that I don't think it crosses his mind which one has the better chance. He thinks it doesn't matter who it is. He's going to handle it the same exact way. He's going to give them a nickname. He's going to, you know, spout off the shit that he knows that his base will love. And it won't matter whether it's Biden or Bernie or Warren or Buttigieg or Harris, or go down the list. We have a ton of them. Speaking of which, one of them, first I want to ask you mentioned that a friend of yours went to Cal Dem, right? As well.
Yes, as a campaign manager for a local politician.
Nice. And did they enjoy their time at Cal Dem?
I have not seen them yet because they went straight from Cal Dem to the house of the politician that they're working with in the next county over, and they're coming back later this week.
Okay, gotcha.
At which point I will hear all the juicy details, but
I can't wait.
They did say that there were some protests outside Cal Dem, and that the there was a sex worker protest there, and apparently they had the most fashion and style out of all of the other protesters.
I can imagine they would.
Yeah, so that's what I've heard so far.
So what I heard over Twitter, and what we were talking a little bit before we started recording this, and by the way, Brittany Van Horn tweeted this. Yeah, and it's underscore Brittany V is her handle. And she had put, my favorite ASMR video is John Delaney getting booed for a full minute after saying Medicare for all wasn't good politics or good policy. but you didn't realize, which is understandable because we have so many candidates, that John Delaney is another candidate for 2020 for the Democrats. But is he a Democrat? We don't know. Oh, he is, but you know. So I'm going to play a clip of him getting booed at Cal Dem. And this is some great, great entertainment. I actually tweeted that I never thought I would have a favorite John Delaney moment, but here we are. Okay, let's see if I can get it started.
But we need, as Democrats, to build an economy that works. But it's got to be with smart policies. Medicare for all may sound good, but it's actually not good policy, nor is it good politics. I'm telling you. 100 We should have universal health care. We should have universal health care, but it shouldn't be a kind of health care that kicks 150 million Americans off their health care. That's not smart policy.
So you get the gist. They were not thrilled with John Delaney's thoughts on Medicare for all. And what it kind of brings up is that, you know, there's this post that's been going around social media, and I hope I get her name right. It's Mary Robinette Kowal. And she's at Mary Robinette on Twitter. And she was basically talking about how when she was in Iceland, she had found a lump on her breast, and she figured she should go in, obviously, and get it checked. And when she had called to make an appointment, the doctor in Iceland told her to go to the cancer center, and she was like, well, I need a referral for that. And Iceland had no idea what a referral was, because they figure the smartest way to go about it, right, is if somebody might potentially have a cancer scare, it would make sense to go to the cancer center, not to go to your doctor, just so you can get a referral to go to a cancer center 2 or 3 weeks later. Because this is a very long thread, I'm going to paraphrase a bit. So she ended up going to the cancer center. She was not a Icelandic citizen at that point, and I don't believe she is right now.
I think she was working on a film set.
Yes, that's what Iceland, Yeah, and so they charged her $3, what was basically the equivalent of $3 US, and apologize for that, by the way. Now imagine $3, what that will get you in any sort of medical care here. I don't think
you can buy one of the lollipops in the waiting room. That is it.
You can go and buy maybe some hydrogen peroxide in the store over the counter, because if you get it from the doctor, it'll probably be about $60. So they end up taking her directly to get a mammogram while she's there, find out it's a cyst and it's not cancerous. It was across the room. That's where she went to have her mammogram. That's how simple it was. Now, I mean, here in the United States, everybody knows what an absolutely ridiculous task it is. Some people, when they find a lump or something, they go weeks before they finally figure out whether it's cancerous or not because of the various tests and such they have to go through. So for anybody saying that Medicare for All is bad policies,
yeah,
it's just incredible to me.
I just want to say, like, he's like, oh, it's bad politics. What's really bad politics is, like, knowing that Medicare for All is a very popular platform right now, and then saying that publicly in front of a room full of people who disagree with you, like, and then, like, just getting completely booed. I just don't know how you could think, like, this will make me look good. This will make me look electable. Like, if you're concerned about getting electable and getting shit done, maybe if you personally don't think Medicare for All is a good idea, hold that back. Or maybe don't say, like, it's a bad idea, but just propose your own solution. And don't just tell your potential constituents what they should believe. That's, like, so, like, weirdly condescending. Like, actually, your politics are wrong. Let me tell you what's good politics. I'm John Delaney.
Yeah, and
president, and you suck also.
And I have government health care, and I'm going to tell you guys don't want it. You hit the nail right on the head there. And at the end of that speech, he goes into saying that the reason why it is why the policy is bad is because of how many Americans would be kicked off the insurance that they love. Well, first of all, no, there are very few Americans who love the insurance they're on. And if those Americans are more than likely, one, either getting government insurance and they're politicians, or two, they are rich, okay? And they have really, really good insurance because, like I said before, health insurance is treated the same way as cell phone plans here. You have tiers of how much you can afford because nobody gives two fucking shits about the poor people of this country. Mm-hmm. And so it's amazing to me that someone in his position could look at what's going on in this country and the movement, like you mentioned, of that being one of the top things, not just with Democrats, but with independents as well, is Medicare for All. And the fact that you can sit there at a Cal Dem and tell everybody you're wrong and then be like shocked when people are booing you, good on the people for continuing the booing, because that dude, get the fuck out of here. I mean, I don't know what he's even, I mean, he can't be in the top of any of the Democratic polls.
I didn't even know who he was until you, right? Like, the first thing I ever hear about him is he gets booed at the Democratic, like, at Cal Dem, and, like, the first thing you were like, did you hear about John Delaney? And I'm like, who's that? And he's like, he's a Democratic candidate. And I was like, why?
So just to give you a little background on him, since you didn't know who he was, He is an American politician and businessman, of course, who is running for president of the United States in 2020. He was a United States representative for Maryland's 6th Congressional District from 2013 to 2019. So he quit this year to be president. He is a member of the Democratic Party, but the old school version, obviously. So anyways, fuck you, John Delaney. I think we're ready to go out of the jungle, aren't we?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Well, the last thing I'll say is that today, during my live stream where we do crossword, my crossword puzzle live stream, one of the answers was also ran. So that's a word I'm going to be using a lot more lately.
Okay. I like that. Let's talk a little bit about the fact I saw a tweet of yours the other day.
Oh God.
You have never been invested in Jeopardy, which is crazy to me, cause I've watched Jeopardy my whole life.
I don't even know what channel it's on. Like, where do you find Jeopardy?
Well, it's syndicated. So it's like it depends on where you live, but ABC is, I think, usually what it's on.
Okay. I don't have a television.
Oh, okay. So you got to go, well, it's on Netflix has it now. You can go watch older episodes of it.
But I don't watch the new stuff.
Oh, well, yeah, because that's what I was going to mention, because I can't think of his damn name.
James
Holzhauer.
Holzhauer. I'm invested in, like, the story.
Yeah.
The story of Jeopardy. I'm, like, following the arc, because so many people I follow on Twitter are crossword puzzle fanatics and right. crossword puzzle constructors. And you might be surprised, but there's a big overlap between people who construct crossword puzzles and other forms of puzzles for a living and people who like Jeopardy.
Absolutely. I mean, and Jeopardy has categories. If you watch enough of it, you'll start to see, and you're gonna get excited.
Yes, potent potables.
Potent potables. That's one that comes up. Potpourri. There's crossword clues A, B, C, D, all the letters of the alphabet. So it gives you the number of letters and then the clue. And so they actually have crossword categories.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I said you're gonna get excited if you start watching it. And on top of that, they also have some great, my favorite categories, which are usually have to do with music, and you could probably guess it, sports. I actually have, tried out for sports Jeopardy. No, excuse me, for normal Jeopardy. And this is a terrible, thing. So I did pretty decent at the test, the online test. And then it was like during this time where they just started to introduce where you could do an online test, an actual online test that would
Tell you if you were smart enough or not.
No, it actually, yeah, that's the first one I took. But okay. Then there's one that you would take that was actually basically recorded or registered or whatever. So it would actually go toward potentially being on the show. And I actually took the day off so that I could do it. And then I don't know what happened, but I ended up leaving the house to go do something and I forgot about it.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Jeopardy that day?
Well, I was supposed to take the test, yeah.
Take the test, the recorded test.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've been waiting for it to come back around. I think if they'll have me.
On brand.
Yeah, I believe on the sports, like the Are You Smart Enough test, I did the sports one. I think I got like 90 or 95% right. And on the normal one, I was just like, right on the cusp of smart enough. Yeah. They get to like the ones about books or the Bible. And then I go really downhill. It's like, just give me music and TV. And
do you do Learned League?
Do I do what?
Learned League?
No.
If I ever join Learned League, I'll refer you. You can only join it through a referral from an existing member. But it's basically just a trivia competition.
That would be so awesome. I used to, you know, the funny thing is that Jeopardy is like right up my alley though when it comes to like how it's played. Because I will go to some of the trivia, like bar trivia or pub trivia around here. And some of those are easy as hell. And others, I used to go to this one at a place called Boundary Bay Brewery. I don't know if they still do it, but it used to be Sunday Night Trivia. And it was fucking hard. Like I was never in even the top three. And it was really, really hard, much harder than Jeopardy. Jeopardy, I can get over half of the questions right. Not at Boundary Bay Trivia. We've had some other interesting things happen this week. We're going to get to some more stuff about the orcas later, but two more gray whales did wash up on shore here in Washington, which I think is going to start a whole new conversation because we've been trying to figure out why the southern resident whales, orcas, have obviously their populations have been declining. And now it seems to be this year where it's really, really bad for the gray whales. So, that is some of the more recent news on that front. I sent you a link before the show started regarding something else that people are talking about a lot more, and this kind of comes into our, both of us being vegan. So this was on Protect Our Winters Instagram. And by the way, I'm a fan of Protect Our Winters. They do a lot of great work, and we've talked about it before on the show here. But it's interesting because they posted this with the caption "mic drop," and the article is titled "You Can't Save the Climate by Going Vegan. Corporate polluters must be held accountable."
Which is true. You can't like going vegan alone is not gonna.
Right, but it's something that whether the plays a Common Dreams who wrote this, Michael Mann was and Jonathan Brockup were the authors of the article on Common Dreams, and the problem is that no, we can't always be offended by verbiage, but that sort of headline unfortunately has created I'm not sure if for you, but on social media that I've seen, you've seen the people who are very much annoyed by veganism. It's a gotcha sort of thing. It's a, yeah, see, you guys are doing nothing. Personal changes don't do enough, and it's the corporate polluters, so we're going to eat our bacon. We're going to keep on eating our meat. And I realize what they're getting at, because trust me, I mean, you and I both believe corporate polluters should be held accountable as well. That's not even the question. Oh, yeah. But to belittle, and again, I'll mention it as well, it's not necessarily about veganism. It's about changing the way you eat as well. You don't have to go completely vegan to eat, to have a better, better impact on the world with how you eat.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like people do not want to shoulder any of the blame for what's happening at all. They would rather just say it's the bigger entities out there and we are, and we're just going to keep on doing what we're doing. So basically, yeah, they mention personal actions from going vegan to avoiding flying are being touted as the primary solution to the crisis. Perhaps it's an act of desperation, an era of political division, but it could prove suicidal. And that's kind of the comment in there that I think could have been left out, because yes, we do need to see both sides, right? We need to see a personal change, and we need to see a change in how corporations are allowed to do their thing.
Because
but by
in part, I think that like the division between like personal and corporate is like something that I wonder a lot about myself, and I strive to answer this question for myself in the way I act and the way I operate in the world. But I often wonder if I was somebody who had near infinite money, if I was a billionaire, if I was the heir to ExxonMobil, if I had the opportunity to do what they're doing, would I do it? Would I question it? Would I take any personal responsibility? Would I think about my actions and their impact at all? Because I think that, it is like a lot of these like top 1% like mega billionaires I should say, who are causing most of this environmental devastation through the way they've set up their businesses. But a lot of like what they're currently doing is essentially inherited from people who didn't know better, and they're just continuing that work uncritically, unquestioning, not taking any personal responsibility. Like, if I'm not willing to take personal responsibility for the actions that I have as an individual, why would I judge somebody who's just doing the same thing at a larger scale? Like, you could argue that like people at our income level and our demographic are causing a lot significantly more environmental devastation than a person who's living in abject poverty, like complete like poverty, like which we are causing, have a greater environmental impact than somebody who is in that position. Mm-hmm. How can I be reflective of that? And how can I think about the way like I operate within these systems as well as how these systems operate around me, you know? Like, just because, right. I don't know.
That's, well, and there's nobody's perfect, right? That's always something that needs to be, that can't be said enough. But kind of to your point, but another viewpoint of it is also if we don't as individuals hold ourselves to a higher standard. And trust me, I have my vices. You know, you and I have even joked around about the fact that I still, you know, sometimes have plastic bottles. And you're like, hey, no, you know, go, you know, you very rightfully so, you know, changed you. And so I'm not perfect in that regard at all. But I try to continue to better myself in that way. If we don't continue to try to better ourselves, then why are we expecting anybody else to do that either? Because at the end of the day, too, we are the consumers who continue to you know, we are a part of it. Now, are we as much to blame as what they get away with? No, that is lack of regulations. It's really modern day monopolies. And again, it's the politicians that have allowed this to happen over the years. But I just, whether they actually were mean to pit the two against each other or not, it starts to become that, where it feels like if we start to hold, you know, corporate polluters accountable, then y'all can stop worrying about your eating habits. Yeah. And that's just, it just doesn't make sense to me. I feel like, again, whether they mean it or not, it's just not the right way to go about it. And that's why I feel like Protect Our Winners is better than that too. And, you know, I don't know why veganism and vegans are always the, there are so many people who are so ready to just tell them how wrong they are. Yeah. And that's like, I just don't get it. Like, I mean, they're like, you know, you ask them, why do you hate vegans so much? Oh, because they can't keep their mouth shut about it. All right, they're telling us what to eat. Well, I mean, fuck, you turn on the TV and they're telling you, you know, you've got milk campaigns. You have, you know, I remember when I was a kid, I don't see them as much anymore, but you had, the beef industry had commercials. You know, you've seen Arby's commercial with We Have the Meats. I mean, they're telling you what to eat all over the fucking TV, okay? So us saying what we eat and what we think maybe would be better if people started eating is no different than what the rest of the population is telling people to eat either. So, I don't know. I just get really, really sick of that narrative continually being pushed, that especially that as they try to turn veganism into virtue signaling. And that's becoming a buzz term that's being used repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And it's annoying. Yeah, you have a ghost in your room, Aiden.
No, I have a rat in my room.
Hey, Gretchen.
Yeah.
Gretchen.
There is, for those of you who can't see the video right now, that one of the blankets on top of one of the rat cage that she has, it just fell off in the middle of me ranting.
The rat's just on top, and I think that I saw her. She looked really cute. She was like, "What happened?"
It was like, I was like, "Oh my god, a ghost!" And I remembered you have a pet rat.
Yes, yes. The rat who is on top of the cage that she lived in. But a ghost is Occam's razor, most likely a solution.
Yeah, well, that's the first thing that came to my mind because, you know, obviously that would, yeah, make sense. So we got through all that, and are you ready? Should we talk about our favorite things of the week? Have you do you have anything ready to go? Or
I do. Okay, so great. Today before was recording, I was live streaming on Twitch. You can follow me, twitch.tv/AIDANWOULD. Aiden, what?
Link is in the description, by the way.
It is in the description. But I was playing a game called Celeste, which I don't think I've talked about Celeste on this show before.
You have not.
Okay, well, it's like a platformer game where you play a girl named Madeline, and she's trying to climb a mountain, essentially, and each, like, and the mountain's like a big picture, like apparently like there's some big anxiety metaphor, and it's that I'm like working through, like Madeline has anxiety, and like you're sort of like, as she conquers the mountain, she's conquering parts of herself, but like different areas of the from what I can tell, like, different parts of the level, every big level of the game is themed around a symptom of anxiety. So, like, the first level I had, I think, was more of an introduction to the game, but then the second one was like a dream game, like, or like a nightmare themed level. And the next one was that I'm still working through, and I haven't quite finished it yet, but you're working your way through a hotel, and there's this creepy owner of the hotel who has like shit everywhere, and like you have to help him basically clean his shit up. Okay. But he's like panicking about like being too overbearing, but then like also there's Madeline who's like trying to help this random dude handle his shit when she's supposed to be climbing a mountain. So there's like all these like weird like layers of like different metaphors, but the game itself is like designed to be extremely difficult to play. I it shows you your death count at the end of every level, and my like death count for like level one was like 380 or something. My death count for like level two was like 400 or something. Like you die so often, but like it's just a very brilliantly constructed game. Like the mechanics are great, the level design is awesome, and then this overarching narrative, which I'm still in the process of unraveling, has been really enticing to me. And so I was actually like, the reason I was like a little later, I had to text you like, oh, it's 20 more minutes, is because I just like wanted to like try and like beat a little bit more of the game before I like logged in. So again, the game's called Celeste. I'd recommend like just checking out a trailer or something. It's like just such a cute little game.
Well, and it's amazing with how, you know, much freedom developers have these days, that there's such beautiful ideas. People have beautiful minds out there, and they're coming up with some great ideas. So that sounds great.
Yeah. I feel like I didn't sell it well enough. So just like, I just go like get the game, like just try it out. Just trust me, or like at least watch the trailer. Cause I feel like I didn't sell it well enough, but again, it's just like such an experience and there's so much shit happening. And like, I'm not someone who's like good at platformers. Like I've successfully beaten one platformer in my life, and it was called Grease. I played it just like a few months ago on stream. That was the first platformer I've ever beaten. And then the second platformer I've tried is Celeste, which is this notoriously difficult game that's designed to be just so hard. And I'm like going into there completely blind. But like, it's designed in a way that like, it'll be hard, but like it's fair, you know, it's possible to be overcome. And that's where I think it really like succeeds.
Now, and for somebody like me, who is not as intelligent when it comes to video games, and a platformer means that you are, I'll tell you what,
you know, I'm how the original Mario games were.
That's what I thought. Okay, I was gonna say that, and then I thought I was gonna sound dumb, and so I was
you're good. So, okay. So like Mario is like a classic example. I don't know a lot of other platformers because I'm also like again, this is like the second one I've ever played, but that's the gist.
Okay, well, it sounds like fun. And where can people play that? Is that like a computer game or?
It's on Steam. It might be available elsewhere. I'm not really sure. I play all my games on PC, so you just have to check, but I would just recommend trying it.
Well, sounds cool. So my best thing of the week, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, kind of alluded to it, and this is obviously a hopeful thing because we know that the death rate of newborn orca calves in the southern resident pods has been very unfortunate recently. But we're going to try to be positive and hopeful because a new southern resident orca calf was born in J-Pod. This is from Q13 Fox, which is a local channel here in Seattle. And it was actually off of Tofino in British Columbia, so that's Vancouver Island. J-Pod, the southern resident killer whales, has a new calf, marking the second birth of the endangered species in 5 months. That puts the number now up to 76. It was down to 70, as low as 74 just a little while ago. And of course, they're saying second birth is phenomenal news for the dying species. It lost three of its members last summer. And so that's just really, really good to see. And I'm happy about it because, you know, anybody who's listening to this knows how much I care about those whales. And even though, you know, British Columbia, who we have a bit of a rivalry with, we like to discuss whose whales are they, which we know they're not anybody's whales. So now that we've realized they're nobody's whales, now the discussion is who loves them more, British Columbia or Washington. And they got to see the baby first. So I'm a little bit jealous that it was off of Vancouver Island. They got to see the new J-Pod calf. But, you know, at the end of the day, here in Washington, we love our whales more than anything. And, yeah, just a little bit more than you do, British Columbia. Oh, man. Well, that was, yeah, it was good times as always, Aiden.
Hell yeah.
And once again, happy Pride. Tell your mom happy Pride for me, by the way.
I will tell my mom for sure.
Yes, and to everybody else, you can listen to, although it is, she did mention she is going on hiatus, but you can listen to the episodes that are out right now of Dibs Welcome to the Family. That is Aiden's other podcast that she does about.
Yeah, I have one more episode coming out next week, and then I'm just going to take a little bit of a break. And probably when I come back, I'm going to start doing it every other week because it's a lot. it's a very intensive show to write and edit. I put a lot of care into it.
Completely understandable. You do definitely put a lot of care into it. It's, of course, about donor siblings. You mentioned like unconventional.
It's a podcast about people who are conceived via sperm and egg donation. And this the just evolving fertility industry and the impact that these changes in the fertility industry and in our conceptions have impacted our evolving understanding of family.
And you can also listen to the Lemonade Magazine podcast, my podcast, which features music and interviews. And we had a lot of downloads last week, so hopefully our bandwidth keeps up. We've got the next episode is going to feature Ashley Strongarm, who is a lovely human being, and she sings about relationships and about mental health issues. And she's just, I absolutely adore her. So yeah, check out that episode coming up soon, this Friday, actually. And the Conservationist Conversationalist, which is what you guys are listening to right now, it's a bonus podcast on PodCoin. So you can make 1.5 times the coins on PodCoin app. And we appreciate being a bonus podcast on this. We have new subscribers this week. Thank you so much, everybody, for subscribing and listening. We're glad to have you on board this crazy ride. And we'll be back next week.
Hell yeah.
All right. Stay dope.